This is the Sunshine Economy, commerce with communists doing business with Cuba. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. American Airlines finished up its massive merger with U.S. Airways over the weekend. It officially makes it the largest airline in the world. It flies to 54 countries, and it hopes to add one more next year, Cuba. Now, American technically already flies there and has been flying there from the U.S. since 1991, though not as American Airlines. It flies an average of 22 charter flights a week to the island from Miami and Tampa. It plans to launch another charter from Los Angeles before this year is over. Now, the State Department and Cuba have been talking for months about allowing regularly scheduled flights between the two countries. Talks American thinks will allow its passengers to book flights to Havana as easy as Harrisburg. As relations have thawed between the two countries, the U.S. airline industry is just one hoping to do business with communists. Now, later in the program, we'll hear from a couple of Cubans who left the country becoming technology entrepreneurs and now want to go back to do business in the country they fled. But first, American Airlines and its Cuban ambitions. Howard Cass is the Vice President of Regulatory Affairs at American Airlines.
Business has been very good. Since the December 17th announcement by the Obama administration, we've seen an uptick in requests for charters, and we know the demand on the flights has been good as well. So we're really excited about what we're seeing, and we're very bullish on future scheduled service with Cuba.
What do you anticipate in terms of regularly scheduled aircraft, commercial aircraft service to and from Cuba?
We anticipate operating to Cuba as soon as the two governments work everything out. We're ready to go now. Today, when we take somebody to Cuba, the charter process is a separate one, and we can't ticket them all the way through, and their bag check isn't seamless. So once different points in Cuba become part of the American network, a passenger in Minneapolis will book a ticket to Havana just as easily as a passenger. That same passenger in Minneapolis books a ticket to any other point in the Caribbean.
I know the State Department has been very reluctant to put a timetable on this. How about you, Howard? What's American planning for in terms of regular service to Cuba?
We're highly optimistic that we'll be serving Cuba with scheduled service next year.
Next year, sometime in 2016. Do you want to narrow it down to a quarter at all?
I'm personally optimistic first half of next year, let's say that.
All right, narrow it down to 6 months. What gives you that kind of confidence at this point in the negotiations?
Well, I don't think that there's a lot of stumbling blocks that remain. I also think both governments want to see this happen.
How much of this is on the United States end? In other words, how much of it are Cuban authorities coming back to the U.S., do you think, and requesting certain kinds of policies regarding Cuban air service, regularly scheduled air service, into the United States?
Look, the Cuban government is obviously going to look out for the interests of Cuba and the Cuban carriers, just as the United States does the same with its carriers. And so both sides have some work to do, but I believe both sides are committed to getting this done.
One of the sticking points could be on the Cuban side because of some civil court judgments leveled by American courts and a number of those lawsuits emanating from Miami-Dade County, that if Cuban airplanes were to land on U.S. soil, they could be seized. Is that how big of a concern is that for the American legacy carriers, American Airlines being one of them, looking to open up this regularly scheduled service?
Well, it's an issue that over time has to get resolved. Whether or not it gets resolved on day one of a new agreement or down the road, I think that remains a question that's unanswered at this point. But if there's a deal reached, American is going to start service on day one.
Do you think Cuba is ready for regularly scheduled service from the United States?
I do. If they weren't, there wouldn't be talks that have made they wouldn't have progressed in the talks as they have. You know, the level that ultimately the two governments agree upon to start service may be something that starts at a certain point and then builds from there. It's too early to know how exactly the agreement's going to look, but I do believe the Cubans are ready. Remember, lots of other countries have normal diplomatic relations with Cuba, and so there are flights from Cuba to lots of other places, Europe and other points in Latin America, and adding adding the United States to their network is, I'm sure, something the Cubans want to see.
How much more business does American think it can do with Cuba with regular service as opposed to charter service?
Well, as the Obama administration brings down more and more of the prohibitions on doing business and traveling to Cuba and interacting with Cuba, We believe that will increase demand as folks who maybe never considered Cuba as a destination they wanted to go to, or businesses that never thought they could sell in Cuba now have Cuba on their radar scope and on their maps and start to think about it. So as U.S. business finds Cuba and discovers Cuba, we think that'll increase demand. And over time, we think that the prohibition on tourism will go away, and that will also increase demand to Cuba. So we think there's a lot of opportunity.
If regular service comes into play in the first half of next year, as you anticipate and hope for, Howard, how would the profile of an American flyer to Cuba potentially change? Could it change from beyond the diaspora more to a corporate client?
We think it'll be a really good mix of both. Absolutely. I mean, we've seen all the different trade missions from different states, from states in the Midwest, from states in the Northeast, throughout the United States. Folks want to go to Cuba. They want to see the opportunities. They want to help develop the Cuban economy. And American looks forward to enabling those folks to get to Cuba in a more simple online fashion.
I know you want to start a LAX, Los Angeles International Airport, into Jose Marti in December. What about Dallas? What about other American hubs that you'd like to bring into Havana or other places in Cuba?
Clearly, we know Miami is going to be a great hub for Cuba. We're certainly looking at our other hubs as potential opportunities, but we haven't made any decisions yet.
As the Vice President of Regulatory Affairs, you've got a full plate of stakeholders to keep on top of. Where does Cuba rank in that for you?
It's really important to the company. The company wants to have a big presence in Cuba. We've said that publicly. We've been out in front on that issue all since the beginning. And so it's a high priority. It's a high priority for me. It's a high priority for American Airlines.
Howard Kass, the Vice President of Regulatory Affairs for American Airlines. Still to come on our program, the risks of a startup entrepreneur in Cuba.
I was afraid that maybe they can come from me.
This is a special pledge edition of the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. Haram Santayas was in his senior year at Havana's premier engineering and science university, Jose Antonio Echeverria Higher Polytechnic Institute, known as CUHAI. He was studying information technology, designing websites, even though he rarely had an internet connection. This was 2007. Fidel Castro was still president, and the Cuban economy was slowing down considerably. Now, he was familiar with Craigslist, that online classified ad website, and he saw an opportunity.
I detect a trend that the Cuban economy needs something like Craigslist or the classified site in other country. So with a friend that was already living in Spain, I started Revolico from Cuba in 2007. So it got traction pretty early. So the government blocked our site in 2008.
What happened when, in 2008, the Cuban government shut down access to the website?
Oh, we were really scared about that, because I was living in the island, so I was afraid that maybe they can come for me, but that was not the case. So when that happened, what we do was that we start looking for a way from our users to be able to access Revolico. So we're starting getting creative, like changing the IP address of the site every hour. We're starting to distribute different domain names to our users.
One of the consequences of the government shutdown, Iram, was that you left your home country. You left the island. You left Cuba for Spain.
Well, it was one of the reasons, but the main reason was that if I wanted to work in a internet related project, in internet related company, if I want to run an internet company, that was not possible from Cuba in that time. Maybe right now it is, but in that time it was impossible. So that was the main reason. And other minor reason is that, yeah, I was afraid that the government was blocking the site actively. So maybe there was a risk for me, but I don't know that for sure.
Today, there are computer parts, American cars from the 1950s, air conditioners, 500,000 listings in just the past 2 months. Before leaving Cuba, Haram connected with another Cuban online entrepreneur, someone who left the island in the early 1990s and then went on to ride the dot-com bonanza of the late 90s in the U.S. Ubaldo Huerta started his own online classified website in Barcelona, eventually sold it to eBay. Haram from Cuba called Ubaldo in Spain asking for advice, and they clicked.
I don't know. We kind of understood each other. We went to the same schools, you know, same high school, same university in Havana, and sort of kind of immediately understood, you know, where we both were coming from.
They were both coming from Cuba. The two are now in business together. They started an online company allowing people to recharge cell phone service time in Cuba. Cubans outside the country usually spend money buying cell phone service time for friends and family inside the country. And still to come in our program, how they hope to hire for their business in Cuba.
We don't know if we'll be 100% legal. We'll have to find a way to comply with the Cuban law.
This is the Sunshine Economy, commerce with communists, doing business with Cuba. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. When President Obama announced his new policy toward Cuba last December, one specific connection he mentioned was telecommunications. After all, Cuba is among the least connected countries in the world. Ubaldo Huerta and Haram Centelles want to be among those helping spread the internet in Cuba. Now, they both grew up there, but left. They're now partners in Fonoma. That's a website that allows users to pay for cell phone service for someone in Cuba called top-offs, like top off their cell phone minutes. And Ubaldo told us they're expanding to include internet connections.
We're going to also start doing top-ups of the initial Wi-Fi connection that are spreading in the island. So you could top up not just the phone plans, but also the internet connections of your relatives.
The business partners want to return to Cuba as well. As the rules of business between the U.S. and Cuba and within Cuba itself change, they want to open an office in Cuba. Just last month, the U.S. Treasury Department announced a new policy allowing U.S. companies, and Fonoma is a U.S.-based company, to open offices on the island. Haram left the island 8 years ago, and he didn't think he'd return for business.
I think in the short term, I will spend a lot of more time in Cuba and eventually maybe return to the island.
When he first left in 2008, Haram worried that he would be harassed or even arrested if he returned. He's not worried now, neither is his partner, Ubaldo Huerta, who left in 1992.
I think eventually the Cuban counterparts, the Cubans in Cuba running the economy, will realize that the people like us that bring experience, bring know-how, are needed, and they're gonna carve a space for us there.
They want to carve out commerce in Cuba as well. The two partners in Fonoma want to open an office in their home country and hire Cubans to help market and develop their business. But whether their plans are allowed by Cuban authorities, that remains an open question.
I think it's a gray area. We will have to set up a cooperative there. We'll have to... The reality is that we don't know if we'll be 100% legal. We'll have to find a way to comply with the Cuban law.
There are things that you are allowed to do, and there are other that, as Ubaldo say, are a totally gray area. So we have to manage to be able to exactly detect what are the things that we must to do and what are the things that we try to test first to see if we are allowed to do that.
Hiring in Cuba, after all, is tough. Officially, it's highly regulated by the central government. Who can hire, for what jobs, who can be hired, and for how much. Haram Satias and Ubaldo Huerta of Fonoma expect to use Cuentapropistas, the self-employed, to help build out their website and grow their business.
We could provide a way for people to pay utility bills. This industry of bill payments or cross-border bill payments exists in Mexico, Dominican Republic, many countries. Cuba has it, allow it for self-prepaid cell phone service and now internet, but it could be extended to other things. I think if we have a presence there, we'll be in a better position to try to explore, expand the business to other areas.
They're looking toward the future, and still to come, we'll look to the past and how these two tech entrepreneurs became tech entrepreneurs with very little tech.
Back then, I did not have computers, so I study computer programming on my own.
The main challenge is that I were study computer science and software engineer without internet.
We're back on the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. Growing up in Cuba today means your experience with the internet, if you have any at all, is through a Wi-Fi hotspot, crowded on the curb outside an internet cafe or in a city plaza.
I'm Iram Centelles.
My name is Ubaldo Huerta.
Growing up in Cuba in the 1990s, like Iram Centelles, or in the 1980s, like Ubaldo Huerta, a connection to technology in Cuba was even more tenuous. Now, they both left, Huerta in the early 90s, Centelles about a decade ago. They didn't know each other growing up in Havana, but they graduated from the same high school and the same college. They've gone on to become accidental technology entrepreneurs.
The main challenge is that I were study computer science and software engineer without internet.
Back then, Iram did not have internet, but I did not have computers. So I study computer programming on my own. We just set up a few people and we'll basically learn the theory of how to, all the depth of algorithm and all that.
That's pretty difficult. That's almost, I saw back now and I can't really imagine how we managed to do that.
We're basically science and technology students that got thrown into this path of becoming entrepreneurs.
We were actually programming websites without internet. I think that influenced my total career, because the lack of resources has been a constant in my career all the time.
So out of necessity, out of teaching myself a new skill, out of trying to solve a problem for the community I moved in, I became an entrepreneur by accident.
I don't really see saw me as an entrepreneur back in that time, because in this time I'm a programmer, so I saw me basically as a programmer. So in that time, I was trying to fix a problem that me and my friend were facing.
We're part of an economic model, as you say, that doesn't work. It's proven not to work. It's a centrally planned economy. Doesn't work for anyone. We naturally find our way to work in the real world, right?
Growing up in that failed economy, that was pretty challenging, because what I saw when I was growing up is my parents trying to make a living or almost trying to survive in a truly challenging and truly critical environment.
Cuba is in the process of, they call it updating the system, although they continue to say that they want to pursue socialism.
You don't have the space to start thinking strategically with some kind of understanding to create a business, to be able to be an entrepreneur, or stuff like that.
We like to participate in the Cuban economy. That will bring new ideas. That will obviously have a change in the political system over time.
You can do a lot in an environment that is restricted if you learn how to navigate in that kind of environment. You actually can do a lot.
in the island need us as much as we need them. We're just one family. We're basically Cubans spread all over the world. And we want to claim our space to share a space in the island like anyone.
The human resources, the people in Cuba, are truly prepared to make this wave of new small and medium-sized businesses. I'm really thrive in that aspect. And I hope, I have highly hopes that this new time will be better and we will construct a better country.
Ram Santeyas and Walter Huerta, two Cuban technology entrepreneurs who left the island and are now hoping to do business with Cuba again. Wanda Miles is our technical director. I'm Tom Hudson. This is the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. Thanks for listening.